저기요.
수지 주세요. 짠.
짠.
Welcome back to the Pocha Playlist. We just reviewed our Patreon episode of the month. It's a double movie feature. It's going to be Ballerina and My Name is Logi Wan. I think we all collectively enjoyed both movies. Andy, why don't you say a quick little review of Ballerina? And Jenny, why don't you say a few great words about Logi Wan?
Sure. Andy, yeah. You want to go first?
Yeah, Ballerina is a pretty good show. I would say I recommend this one over My Name is Logi Wan. There is a spoiler alert that there is a lot of like,
essay.
What is it?
Sexual assault.
There's a lot of like essay or like kind of disturbing scenes that like, so if you don't really like those type of scenes, you might be have some type of like trigger warning for that one. I definitely had to like fast forward a couple like 5 seconds, 10 seconds. I think it was a little bit extreme, but it's a good action revenge movie. It's really, really easy to pay attention to. I think we didn't have that many gripes for it, and I think because it was pretty straightforward, there's like no plot holes. So all in all, a pretty straightforward action movie, and I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, for Logi Wan, I think I had the exact opposite where I was like, I think I would recommend Logi Wan over Ballerina, mainly for the reasons that Andy kind of touched on where there were a lot of jarring scenes for Ballerina. But Logi Wan, I was actually pleasantly surprised by the entertainment value of it. Going in, thought it was going to be just really depressing, sad, like the whole way through. But there's actually some very interesting plot lines. We talk more about it on the Patreon episode, but it kind of keeps it fun, a little bit more lighthearted than when I originally anticipated, but still a great depiction of kind of the immigrant struggle, where we have the main character trying to just take refuge in a foreign country and the struggles that he faces. Both great movies, and you know, I think Logi Wan and Ballerina are both on Netflix in the US, so check it out before you listen to our Patreon episode.
Very well said. So that is going to be March Patreon. We did put out a poll where we asked our ploches to give us some recommendations. A lot of people said Marry My Husband, which I believe is a 2024 drama. We will be doing that next month, so please look forward to that. This episode, we are going to be finishing Dr. Slump and ranking it, which means we have a new slot opening up. Jenny put out another poll on Discord and Instagram, and I think we have a winner, right, Jenny?
Yeah, so it was a very close poll. So we were basically debating between picking up a show called The Midnight Studio, which is a Vicky K-drama. It's a 16-epper. It came out March 11th, so we were like, oh, that one seems pretty interesting. A little bit like maybe spooky because we have like kind of a ghostly element, but also sounds like it was very heartwarming. So that was one of the options. The other one was Chicken Nugget, which is a Netflix K-drama about a dad and a friend who turned their daughter into a chicken nugget, which very different end of the spectrum. I would say it was pretty close. It was almost 50-50, but The Midnight Studio did pull ahead just slightly, so we're going to be picking that up.
Awesome. And just a big warning for everyone, Jenny and I are going to be traveling down to Southern California for a week. We get back Wednesday night, which is typically the days that we record. And so for next week only, we're going to have to delay the episode. It will probably come out either Friday or Saturday whenever we can get to it. But there will be an episode for next week. Well, guys, we have the long-awaited Dr. Slump finale. I believe this was a 16-upper, so we've been with this drama for 8 weeks. We're finally going to rank it on our list. I'll pass it over to you guys.
Cheers!
So we'll be talking about the finale of Dr. Slump. So, you know, I think what we're going to do is just hit on kind of the resolutions that these two episodes did. I feel like the show did a really good job of pretty much tying up most of the storylines that we did care about. So I'll start first with the main leads. I think a really great thing that they showcase is how their relationship kind of finishes up. So they are essentially getting married. So we do have a really happy ending here. And I think the show also does a good job of showcasing how both characters overcome their mental health struggle. Essentially, Jeonwoo is able to perform his surgeries without having more panic attacks. And, you know, Hunter kind of overcomes these obstacles that are thrown at her with just like a different mentality. So which is both great. You know, we saw that in the beginning, both of them were in a slump. And I think it's safe to say that by the end, they're both out of it. So one question I did want to kind of throw at you guys, and this kind of came to mind while I was watching watching the finale, but I think the show does a really good job of coupling the characters' healing with their relationship and, like, with the start of their relationship. And, you know, obviously we get to a good place in their relationship where they also are more or less healed, but, you know, it is a good thing. But I also feel like potentially some people could view this in a negative way, where it's like their healing was very codependent on them being together. But do you guys feel like by the end, the show did a good way, good job of separating kind of their independent growth versus just basically providing support for each other and kind of that codependent nature? I don't know if my question is making sense, but what do you guys think?
I think it's very down the middle for me. I would say that they did kind of grow separate from each other. Like, I did voice a lot of my opinions on, like, I felt like they were dependent on kind of, like, each other to get out of their growth. I think I think, like, he really, really relied on her to kind of, you know, solve kind of some problems for him. He kind of went out of the way to, like, you know, fight the guy and solved some of the problems too. So it did feel a little bit codependent, and I think it's codependent because they want to spark those, you know, like, emotions of, like, they kind of need each other and this romantic things. I feel like there was a lot of codependency, and I wanted to see kind of more growth independent from each other.
Brandon, what about you?
I think for Hannah's character, I think she really she was able to overcome her slump on her own. I think ultimately the way I took it, by the end, she has this idea that she's going to voice her opinions much, much sooner. And I think, I forget if it was in either episode 15 or 16, when she kind of gets shafted for that position yet again. Mm-hmm. You know, she just says, hey, I told myself that I was going to voice these opinions, and I'm telling you that I'm upset. You know, I'm not going to quit or anything, but this is one way that I'm going to address these problems head on without just keeping it inside and letting it eat away at, like, my soul. So I think that was kind of what I took away from her slump. Mm-hmm. And I know the term slump is very vague. We can all kind of define it however we want, and who's to say something is a slump or another. But I just feel like for Chungwoo's character, I took his a little bit differently, just because his was like an attack on him.
Yeah.
And as soon as the attack was over, that big issue was quickly resolved, and then it was just kind of PTSD. Mm-hmm. And from that perspective, I think he really needed Hunter to help him through that, you know, being with him in the room, kind of I don't mean this in, like, a negative way, like holding his hand and being there and making sure that he feels reassured. I think that was great, and I think he needed that from her. Mm-hmm. I feel like Hannah kind of came to her conclusions on her own, but Chungwoo was definitely there cheering her up, being the best boyfriend ever, taking her out on those dates, which are really important too. So, you know, I think your question is very valid, Jenny. They definitely needed each other. And they dealt with their own problems their own ways.
Yeah, I totally agree with both of you guys. I think what I thought was a good nuance that I ended up getting from the show was they were dependent on each other, but it wasn't like they needed each other in order to personally heal, which I think is really important, because I do think sometimes, you know, if you're in a really dark place and you find somebody who's kind of like your ray of hope, then, like, everything... you put all of your emotion and everything onto this person to be kind of your savior. But I didn't feel that way about their relationship. It just felt like mutually supportive, which is why I think it was important for me to come out feeling that way. I do think sometimes, especially in shows, you know, especially in K-dramas, you have, like, this knight in shining armor complex, which kind of masks the personal development of a character. And I actually didn't think that the show did that. So, you know, one of the positives I will hand it to the show, I think their development was well thought out, and it was truly independent. They both grew in their own ways with just support from each other, but, you know, not in an overbearing way. All right, well, I think that kind of wraps up their relationship. Is there anything else you guys want to touch on regarding them too?
I guess just an extension of them too. I feel like their families. I think, Andy, you mentioned this maybe last episode or the other episode. I don't think there's many scenes that we have with Chungwoo and Hunter where the mom or the brother or the uncle kind of doesn't come in sooner or later. Mm-hmm. I think one of my biggest gripes for this show really is going to be how they treated handling Chungwoo's family. I thought that would be a great angle for his slump, right? Like, he clearly has a bad relationship. and they kind of showed glimpses of that. I believe it was last week. I don't think there was any mention of the Chungu's parents this week, and so it really just left me shaking my head and wondering why they didn't explain that. I think that was an underhand toss for a great slump, but unfortunately they didn't deliver. I feel like Hanar's family storyline, we had a lot of comments and even some gripes about her family. I feel like by the end, I really enjoyed it. They are a solid, tight-knit family. They don't have a family head, a father figure, because unfortunately he passed away, but I think the uncle really stepped in for that role. I loved seeing her brother step up when, you know, when he made the noodles the same way. Like, that was great. The mom... Hanar had this kind of a little like a speech about the mom and her feelings towards the mom. I thought that was very heartwarming. Really wrapped up her side of that family really well.
Yeah. Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, in terms of family, I think I never really had a good relationship with the family, or like a good like
impression
instance with the family. I think the family kind of, I felt them really annoying and like didn't feel super realistic at the very end. I felt like the progression, especially like the brother, just felt like, oh, let's just give him a happy ending kind of a thing. We just make him like, you know, good kind of a thing. It doesn't really justify his character, I would say. I still think he's kind of like a useless kind of like a brother or slash character in the show. I think the mom was, all the family members continue to butt in everywhere. And I think they're trying to make it comedic, but to me, I just thought it annoying more than comedic. So for me, the family just doesn't really add to the development of the show. So for me, it's just like, well,
yeah, it's okay. I wonder if it's more of like a cultural thing where, you know, in Korea or maybe in Asia in general, like, you know, even when you're older, you're kind of expected to be very involved and part of your, you know, your family life. So I think we saw this in another K-drama. I want to say it was Record of Youth, which we reviewed like way back then. But it's like, you know, even as an older person, you know, who's maybe in their 20s, maybe in their 30s even, where, you know, you have your own career, you have your own life. Like, it's almost like you still live with your family, you still live with your parents, like everybody's still kind of under the same roof. So maybe that's where some of this, like, you know, it's a little bit different than what we're used to here in the States, I wonder. But I can see where you're coming from, Andy.
Well,
Andy,
just one more thing to note on the family as well. I think a lot of the problems of the show, like problems, for example, oh, someone's going to find out about a relationship.
Yeah.
The problem is about families gossiping to each other. And then the root of this gossip has always been like the mom or the brother. And they're like, oh, no, we got to do this thing kind of a thing. And that's like creating the conflict or problem of each episode. And for that to be like the main conflict or problem for like a full like 20 minutes, it does get kind of annoying to me, because then it's like your family members, like you're supposed to uplift each other and whatnot. But they were the ones causing the issues. So it's, yeah, that's why I felt that way for them, too.
Andy, you didn't even like it when the brother made his first paycheck and he was trying to buy the sister and the mom some stuff. I feel like he had some growth from start to end.
That's just because I feel like the writers got to give him like a, you know, like uplifting, like, oh, he grew as well, so let's just make him like, you know, write something in good for him, and now he's a likable character. It's like, no, it just doesn't work like that, you know? Like, it's just, it feels like a shallow growth that like now he's just good. Like, it just, I don't think it doesn't feel realistic to me like that.
Fair enough. I will say on the family resolution, I didn't like it at first, but now after a while, I do like it. Was the uncle's random little love line? Oh, yeah. I think when it showed up, I was like, "What? Who is this?" And like, I thought it was like his long lost daughter or something, because the female looks so young, but it was like an ex old flame, you know. And I was like, "Oh my gosh!" But like, you know what? I'm kind of happy for him, you know? Like, I feel like the uncle as a character is very understated in terms of, like, his value to his family. Like, he's literally just the brother of the mom, and he uprooted his entire life to support his sister who wanted to come to, you know, a different city for her daughter, and like he gave up on a lot. So at the end, the fact that he was able to reconnect with someone he cared about, like, I'm actually really happy they did that for him.
But you know what's funny, and I actually knew this because I looked up the actor before. I'm just curious, how old do you think he is, Jenny?
Maybe like 45.
How old do you think he is, Andy?
Yeah, I would put him around like 40 to 45. Yeah,
he's only 10 years older than me.
He's 40?
He's not, so even he's like 40. 30.
Oh, he's 39?
Yeah, so like he's like not as old as like he looks on screen. So I don't know how old the other person was, but I remember when I saw her, immediately I was like, wait, he's not that old. Like, it shouldn't be that weird.
I guess. I think I've just seen him in so many like Ajushi type roles in the past on like other shows, you know, not just this one. So I've always just assumed he was older. But yeah, you're totally right. Okay, well, I think we kind of talked about the family enough at this point. You know, once again, frustrated they didn't really resolve Jung-woo's family, but I think Brandon already explained that aspect. So let's talk about the second leads a little bit. You know, we have the final declaration of love, and you know, a lot of that was really prompted by their kids, so I thought that was very heartwarming. Anything else you guys want to talk about, just maybe how they got together, maybe their hesitancies, etc.?
No, I feel like, you know, her, she had like a long explanation as to why she just can't just fall right back head over heels. And I thought it was very realistic and mature, and it's an adult problem as you have two single parents.
Yeah.
It's not like a high school or college relationship, you know? So I thought they were delicate with that. And even Taeyong had a long explanation when they were at the park. So I thought that their relationship was heartwarming, and I said it on this podcast many times. I think their love line was definitely the reason why I really came back excited to watch Dr. Slump every week. I still wish that we got a little bit more seeing the entire family together. That's one side of me, but the other side, you know, I understand that that's a delicate process in and of itself. You know, it's just really hard to just make a stitch together a family just like that. So I don't need them to like force a scene like that. So I don't know. I would have liked it, but I can also understand why they didn't do it.
Andy, any thoughts?
No, I think they wrapped it up really, really well. I totally forgot, maybe I missed it, but did they talk about his backstory of how, like, why he separated or what happened to the mom?
Part of me feels like they covered it earlier in the episodes and we just missed it.
Yeah,
I feel like it has come up.
Yeah, I don't think they talked about it. I don't think I remember.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, I agree with you, Brandon. I think, you know, we got a drop of their relationship with the kids, or there is a photograph of, I think, Taeyong, Hongnam, and their two kids, you know, all side by side in a photo. And I think, honestly, that was really sweet. And, you know, once again, understood why maybe they didn't want to go into that. But that was one of the great relationships of this show, and it was one of the things that agreed kept me watching week over week. All right, well, I think that kind of wraps up our discussion on Dr. Slump. I think we obviously covered some of the things that we thought were good, some of the things we thought were bad. But, you know, maybe just last overall thoughts on the show, and then we'll go into rankings.
Yeah, I mean, I think this finale, I think they just wrapped it up like we said last week. I think they just needed to wrap things up. No major conflicts. I think it's totally fine the way they wrapped it up. At the end of the day, I think I'm like fine getting through the show. For me, felt like going like a slump. It was a slump to get through Dr. Slump a little bit through some aspects. But I'm glad we're here to rank it now.
Andy's really coming up with great little zingers about these dramas. What was the other one? It was a Shot for Clowns.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
It's a slump to get through Dr. Slump. All right. I don't have anything to say unless you do. We can get into the ranking, Jenny.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, let's get right into the ranking. So right now we have a very small list. It's only two K-dramas, and it's literally ranked A Shop for Killers and then Killer's Paradox. So Brandon, do you want to go first?
It's going to sound so negative, but like, I liked Shop for Killers. Killer's Paradox was good. Dr. Slump was really mediocre for me. So I would just have to put it last. I mean, we only have three dramas.
Yeah. So. Andy? Any thoughts?
Well, this one's really hard because I really don't like Shot for Killers, and I think this is better than Shot for Killers. So I would put this one on top, letting Killers be on the very, very bottom.
So you would... So how does this drama rank against Killer's Paradox, though, for you?
No, I would have Killer's Paradox, Dr. Slump, and then A Shot for Killers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's not exactly flipped. Got you. I don't know. I think, personally, I still enjoyed this a little bit more than Killer's Paradox just because I had a hard time watching Killer's Paradox. I don't know. It's tough. I feel like we're all in three very different places with this show. All
right,
here, let's talk about it this way. We'll go through, you know, some questions. So in terms of pacing, in terms of entertainment value, I feel like Dr. Slump is kind of negative for both shows. I think the pacing was just really, really dragged out. So for that, I could see it going lower than the two on our list. But the only other thing is, I do think Dr. Slump is easier to recommend than both A Shot for Killers and Killer's Paradox for me, which is why I would have put it higher. So I'm kind of like, I don't know if that helps the ranking at all. But Andy, what about you for both of these topics?
Yeah, for me, this one, the biggest gripe that I had for Dr. Slump was like, it is for, I feel like at the end of the day, it was relatively shallow. I think the villains felt like fairly flat. I think the family members felt a little bit flat. The characters, I think they're pretty good to like just watch on camera. I think they had real conflicts that they had to get through. We can see go through their struggles and their emotional things. I think the filming for the show is really, really good. And the music for the show was decent. Like the acting for the show. So I did have some positive notes definitely for this show. For Shot for Killers, though, I have zero positive things for that show. So, I mean, it's just comparing some positive things to no positive things. So that is where I'm coming from.
It's just tough because one drama is number one and the other one's like
number
number
three.
Yeah, he has to skip a title to then put it all the way at the top. Yeah. And I for sure feel like at least one of the two is better than Dr. Slump. So I can't justify putting it number one. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I can see that.
Even Andy agrees that Killer's Paradox is better than Slump.
Mm-hmm.
So then how can you put Slump above it then?
So does that mean that Slump should be last compared to Killer's Paradox and A Shot for Killers? Because Andy would have put
Killers...
Should
they all just be tied for first place?
Well, Andy, do you care more about Killers not being first? Sorry, do you care more about Shot for Killer not being first? Or do you care more about Killer's Paradox actually representing that you like it more than Dr. Slump?
I prefer that Shot for Killers goes down because I actually think I'm down to drag Killer's Paradox with Shot for Killers because I think Shot for Killers is legitimately a bad show.
If the guy feels that strongly, then I say you just give it to him.
So what will the ranking be?
Put Dr. Slump first. And then Shot for Killer and Killer's Paradox. Unless we're just going to open a re-ranking. And then you just swap it so that Andy gets his way completely. Right? Killer's Paradox.
We should probably have another discussion about Killer's Paradox and Shot for Killers maybe down the line. Well, maybe it just needs to like sink in a little bit more.
I was going to say, like, does Dr. Slump feel like a top K-drama of this year? Just collectively for this group.
No.
No, I don't think so.
I don't even know what the upcoming schedule looks like, but I cannot imagine that Dr. Slump is the best we're going to get this year. I don't even think it would be top 15 when it's all said and done.
Would A Shot for Killers, I know, Andy, your answer, but Brandon, would A Shot for Killers be in your top 10 this year?
I don't think any of the dramas we currently have are going to be in the top 10, which is why, ultimately, I don't really care. Whether one or, you know, one goes right above the other, it's not going to matter in the long run. So I'm fine doing what we have to do now. If we're not going to open up a re-ranking, then we'll put Dr. Slump first.
Okay, I think that's fair, because I think Dr. Slump, you know, I think Brandon and I like A Shot for Killers more, but I still like Killer's Paradox less than Dr. Slump. So at this point, we'll even out.
Yeah.
Dr. Slump is higher, but that doesn't mean that Dr. Slump is number one show of this year, because I think we're all in agreement that it's just an okay show. So I think we just settle there.
Let's put it on the list and let's put an asterisk on Dr. Slump.
I think we have an asterisk in all three of these shows.
I think we should put an asterisk for all three. I think later during this year, maybe halfway through the year when we have like 10 shows already on the list, I think there's going to be, because I think we do have to get through the discussion for Shot for Killers and Killer Paradox, because I think it's always going to be that line of, you know, is this better than that one kind of a thing.
Yeah, right. I agree.
I think it's really easy to compare other shows with Dr. Slump, because I think we all feel strongly that Dr. Slump is very mediocre, but it's more about, you know, what is better than the other. And that comes down to personal preference at the end of the day.
Okay, sounds good. Well, Dr. Slump will be number one on our list. So it'll be Dr. Slump, Shot for Killers, Killer's Paradox. But, you know, once again, to everybody listening, you know, if you really love Dr. Slump, I don't want you guys to feel like you can't like it because we are like, oh, it's kind of meh. Like, there was a lot of great things about Dr. Slump that I really enjoyed, but I think the gripes are just what kind of overpowered it, and the pacing for me was just a little bit slow, and it sounds like maybe for this whole team, it was a little bit slow, and that's why for us, it didn't end up being a top show of this year. But you know what? We'll see how this year plays out. Maybe give it 2 months. We're like, oh yeah, you know, it wasn't that bad. So that's our ranking for now. Things might change. You know, we talk a lot about our lists on this podcast, so just stay tuned to see if it adjusts.
All right. Well, congratulations to Dr. Slump. Make sure we get it on the list. All right, guys, let's get into the new drama that we picked up recently, Queen of Tears. Andy, I'll pass this over to you.
Cheers! So we're covering Queen of Tears, episodes 3 and 4. Like nicknames, maybe the show should be King of Tears because I feel like the main character is the guy versus the girl. But actually, I'm not sure where the Queen of Tears is really coming from because we don't really even see her cry that much in the show. But maybe we'll see that in future episodes.
Maybe it's because she's causing other people to cry. So it's like she's collecting their tears, you know? She's the queen of generating tears, you know what I mean?
Generating tears. I don't know. That could be it.
All right.
Yeah, so in this show, I guess we can talk about the relation progression right now. I think there's a lot of back and forth that we see in this. We do see a lot of flashbacks. We do see in the past they were in love, and then in this present day situation, we do see that she likes him, she loves him, she's always been caring for him, and then for him, he's still kind of going this back and forth of kind of hate her, but I'm feeling emotionals with her. He's got this, he's kind of scared to touch her, be in the same bed with her. So it's between the two relationship, they're married, but they're not really he's not really comfortable with her in the sense of being a boyfriend or even being a husband. So we can talk about their relationship right now. And we do have the third male lead come in, Eunsung, and he's kind of becoming a menace in this relationship in a sense. And we don't really know his motive, but yeah, let's talk about the relationship.
Yeah. So I think, right now the relationship is just giving me a lot of whiplash. We keep going very back and forth between really dramatic, cute moments where I'm really swooning over the couple, just starting off right off the bat, episode 3, when Hyunwoo princess carries him, back to the family after she hurts her leg. I'm like, oh my god, so cute. But then you have that night scene where he's literally scared to sleep in the same bed, and it's just kind of very odd. And then you get another flashback scene of how they were cuddling on the first night, and then now he's scared to touch her, and it's just very odd for me. And every single time I feel like I'm really invested in the characters where I see them kind of falling for each other again, I get whiplash again, because Hyunwoo then is upset because his wife has a 51% chance of living, and then he's running around the courtyard yelling, being upset about that. And so I don't know, it's just a little bit tough for me. I really want to get fully invested in the relationship, and I do think these episodes do pack some emotional punches for pieces that we're getting from their relationship, but I can't seem to find myself fully invested just because of these scenes that are just rubbing me the wrong way.
Yeah, I don't feel like my comments from last week on the main male lead have really changed. He still is just, as you just said, Jenny, back and forth on this, when I feel like there really shouldn't be too much of a back and forth. He's just still a character that's a little bit hard to root for. Yes, you have two gorgeous male lead main leads, and they're having steamy kisses and stuff, and it makes for great TV. But just the morals of it, I just can't really get behind. And then you add in the menace into the mix, and it looks like Kim Soo-yeon's character is getting jealous, but then he still as you said, upset that the wife's gonna die. So I'm just
upset that she's gonna live.
Live. So it's just a hot mess. Make up your mind. This is your wife. And remember in My Demon, when you would get the first night after the wedding scenes and they're a little bit awkward with each other, that was cute because there's
this is the first time
tension there. You guys have been married for a couple years now, and he's acting so awkward and scared to get in the bed, and she is undress my whatever, let's lay, let's cuddle and stuff. And I'm you could be there for your wife in a very loving way when you know she's gonna die. So I just feel like I personally don't enjoy those scenes.
Because his intentions are maybe not coming from the right place.
Well, not just that, but I'm just act normal, you know? Yeah, why are you so awkward?
It's because, like, you do see a flashback where, like, they were expecting a kid to, I think it was October 31st, so then obviously they had sex and, like, you know, they slept together and everything, and then now he's, like, super, super awkward with the whole situation. So it feels a little bit, like, off in the progression of, like, emotions, I would say, right? I think that's what you're trying to get to.
Since you brought that up, Andy, you know, if we started to get a perspective from, like, flashbacks or stuff, like, because they went through such a big tragedy, and I figured we would talk about this later, but since you brought it up, we could talk about it now. Like, since they brought up the miscarriage or the accident that they had, you know, if it's really hard to, you know, be intimate with that person again after you had such a tragedy, like, I would at least understand that angle. Mm-hmm. But I don't even think it's that. You know,
the show hasn't been explicit that that's right. The reason.
And so I guess for me, I just have to hope that I keep watching week after week for them to explain it, I guess.
Yeah. I feel like right now the show is just on a really big task to, like, get us to feel good about the couple and their relationship, which I feel like is unorthodox for a K-drama in the sense of, like, usually we go into a show being like, oh, I just want them to get together. And this one, it's just, you don't feel the 100% pull and conviction that this is a couple that needs to be together. Like, the communication is terrible. And it's like, it's only really been 3 years since you guys have gotten married. Like, it's not like you guys have been dating for 40 years and maybe some things have kind of faltered. It's like, 3 years is not that long for all of these issues to be coming out to, like, drive you guys to a point where, you know, you guys are now. So I think that's what maybe Brandon and I are both feeling a little bit.
Yeah.
In terms of the K-drama recipe, it just feels like the show is trying to force you to, like, show that, like, these characters are very organic. They're made for each other. They're in love by showing all these flashbacks and, like, all these lovey-dovey scenes and pulling these heartstrings for us. But at the same time, they really want to do that tension route, like, you know, My Demon, all this other, like, you know, like, conflicting route. And that's what they're trying to do. But they're trying to put them both together. And it's really, really hard to do in the same thing in the first four episodes, especially when we know that he really doesn't want her to live. And that just kind of clashes with everything, which I guess right now it's kind of hard because we're all like, we like it, but we also really don't like it. It's like we're really confused, I guess, at where this is going, especially with this Menace, because I feel like for him he's not even like a proper character, like a good love triangle. We already know he's just out of the mix. He's just kind of there to cause disruption, and we know he's probably like the psychopath of the character, and we don't even know his motives right now. So it's kind of weird. I think his character is very weird for me.
I think that's what I dislike the most about the love triangle right now, because you have the female lead actually trying to, you know, salvage the relationship, for lack of a better word. But for me, I don't really like the main male lead. So for me right now, I have no reason not to root for the other guy who seems to at least care for her a little bit more. But then the show is going so over the top to make him seem bad. I mean, pointing shotguns in dogs' faces, and I remember one scene where he was like looking out the window. It was the most dramatic villain soundtrack, you know, background music that they could have picked. Like, Hans Zimmer composed that for it. It was so villainous, and I was like, okay, clearly they want us to understand that this guy is up to no good. But then it's like, I kind of want to root for you because I don't really like the other guy.
Well, we know that he's trying to bring down Queen's group. Like, he's not good in any way. It's like there's not a question in anyone's head that he could be potentially a good person. Like, I don't think he cares about Hayan at all. My hypothesis is that he's trying to bring down Queen's group. He's trying to bring down the grandpa. Like, he's literally working with the matchmaker lady and some other people to, like, dig up dirt on the grandpa to, like, throw him in jail. And I think he wants Hayan to, like, take the throne, and he's trying to, like, woo her into choosing him so that he can take over the company. That's, like, the trajectory that I feel like this is going in. Obviously, they haven't really given us enough to say that, but I mean, I think it's very solidified at this point that he is, like, a bona fide villain and there's no redemption for him.
My prediction was that, you know, he makes a big speech, or he has like a lot of comments about his upbringing. I think he's an orphan.
Yeah, and he was adopted.
I wonder if it's going to be like, oh, Queen's group was somehow in some way, shape or form, obviously involved with him becoming an orphan. So he's out to get revenge.
Could be. I can see that.
And I said it last week where, you know, the show is obviously going to make this guy seem so bad that you have the other bad guy seem much better just because it's just relative. So I don't know.
Yeah. Going back real quick to the main relationship, I just want to talk about something else that it's really just giving me a hard time, like getting rooting for the main characters, is Hyunwoo's friend, the one that he complains to all the time and is like always like rooting him on to like just be shady. He bothers me so much. Like every single time they have a conversation where he's like, oh yeah, buddy, you're gonna get on the will. And even like, you know, like before Hin like gave him the report that said there's a 51% chance he could live, like that guy was putting ideas in Hyunwoo's head, being like, you're gonna be on the will, that's the surprise. And like he just keeps like making Hyunwoo seem even worse, whereas I feel like Hyunwoo is almost redeeming himself a little bit in my eyes, because he's kind of falling back in love with his wife, you know, he's like, you know, impressed by her, jealous of her, like these little things. I'm like, okay, yes, give me these breadcrumbs. But then this friend comes in and then just reinforces how materialistic this relationship is kind of playing out. So that like really bothers me. And then the second thing is, I thought Hyunwoo's family was going to be like a really big positive force of like, you know, just understanding, you know, like we welcome everyone with open arms. But right now, like the sister and the brother feel very focused on Hin's wealth and her, you know, status over anything related to the brother's relationship with her. And that also bothers me, because I thought that the family was going to be a little bit less materialistic, and it doesn't really come off that way, at least from the brother and sister. Like the whole like, please don't get a divorce, like, you know, text message situation, like that all just was very weird to me as well.
Yeah, I agree with you with the family situation as well. And like I think it's similar to like Dr. Slump too, where like the family members are more getting involved with the direct relationship of like divorce. That was like causing the gossip was causing the conflict of the show. And yeah, that was also, I agree, kind of annoying, especially also the friend as well too. I feel like the show for the main relationship, it's like they really want to showcase love, rekindling love in the sense that like they fell apart and they've rediscovered the love. But the problem is, I think he is wanting her to die, and that is not rekindling love. That is a hatred for someone, like a deep hatred. And they're also trying to spread this breadcrumbs of rekindling love that it kind of just breaks the realism, I would say.
Yeah, plus I think like they've kind of built up Hyunwoo's hate for his wife in multiple different angles. Like there was a scene where I think Hyunwoo's coworker was even like, oh, like look at her, she's walking around like she's gonna tear something apart. And I feel like the fact that the coworker feels comfortable to tell Hyunwoo that about his wife means that Hyunwoo was also like kind of talking shit probably to his coworker about his wife. So it's like Hyunwoo's building up this like house of cards that's just one day gonna blow apart. And just I like don't want Hyun to know how badly her husband has been thinking about her. You know, like that moment is going to be very sad for me, because we know how lonely she is as a character and how her family treats her and just how no one really seems to care about her. And right now she's really hoping that her husband does. And I just don't want this all to come out and fall in her face. And that tension is like making me very stressed out.
I think what I would have preferred for this drama is you keep the plot, but you have the moment she realizes she's gonna die. And you know, like, we're all realistic, we understand that marriages can have their own problems, but it would have been a much more interesting show in my opinion if, you know, from episode two then it's truly just about how can we truly work on our relationship. And then it was a more loving show towards the end. I think that would have just been more enjoyable instead of the route. Like, I don't need this other third guy trying to take over and shoot dogs and stuff. Like, it's just a lot of extra stuff. And I really, really don't like her mom. Gosh, she's just a nasty character. I really don't like him. And then you have this thing about, like, the dad's brother that might have been the one that let the boar out.
Yeah.
When they watch the CCTV footage. So there's just a lot of stuff happening here that I'm just like, a lot of distasteful characters and things happening. I feel like we're being very negative, but what would the devil's advocate argument be here? Because I bet you there's people who watch the show and don't think that the main male lead's character is in the wrong here, because, you know, she is really icy and she's not the nicest person. Like, do you think there can be an argument where she kind of, you know, she's just a mean character?
I definitely think that's the case. Like, she even says it herself, where she's like, I'm not a nice person. I don't have empathy. I don't have sympathy. Like, I don't feel emotions, and I only am starting to feel sad and feel things because of, she's now in the face of death, I guess. So, like, I can see the fact of, like, she's just a very difficult person to be around. And, you know, the reason why they got together in the first place was because he didn't think that this was the world that she was in. And he literally ran away after he found out that it was, but he just loved her so much that he decided to stay. And, you know, lo and behold, this is what happened after 3 years. They just weren't able to work it out. I will say, in terms of the trajectory, the ending of episode 4, where she kind of is vulnerable and he sees the impact that the illness truly is having on her, I hope this is kind of a turning point for their relationship, because I think up to that end scene of episode 4, he never really understood what this illness looked like for her. You know, it was like, oh, she's gonna die, she has a tumor, but like, what does that really mean? And like, end of episode 4, where she's like in her white suit and just all tattered up and just all fucked up looking, for lack of better words, and he's like, oh my gosh, like, she doesn't know how she got here. Like, I hope that that means episode 5 and 6, he's like, okay, maybe I need to stop thinking about the will and like how she's dying, and really see her as somebody that I loved and is going through a tough place. So I'm hoping that there's that turn.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think talking about the ending scene, I was actually kind of frustrated about the ending sequence, but I think this is also a frustration that I've had like some K-dramas lately, was the main character, when she was like being vulnerable, he was kind of yelling at her and he walked away.
Yeah.
And then like, she was just kind of like crying, and the only way out was for her to be vulnerable back. And I was like, I don't think that's a good, like, you know, I feel kind of bad for her, because like, the main male character yells at them to like display their emotions, and then he kind of just walks away. I think he saw that one time at Dr. Slump as well. I was like, I don't think that's a like a good moment just to have. I feel like it's not super right. But regardless, I think the ending scene, yeah, I do hope that this is the turning point. In terms of what Brandon says, what is like the positives for the show, I do think they do a really good job of showcasing the emotional moments, making us feel the connection between the two, those lovey-dovey moments, especially at the end of the episode, episode 4, when they showed the epilogue. I don't know if you guys have been watching the epilogues as well. It's giving me Our Beloved Summer vibes a little bit, where I really like the epilogue. I was like, that is cute. I think when he had the iPod still, and they actually had a connection in the past, I found that to be very emotionally like connecting right there.
Yeah. I was going to ask you guys about it, because like, I think it's such a trope, you know, the past connection trope. It's such a K-drama, just bread and butter. But like, I think in this situation, I'm hoping that it works. Like, there's so much history now. There's like different levels of history. You have when they first met at work, and now you have, oh, they actually knew each other in high school. And even then, he was kind of a white knight to her. So I don't really know how I feel about it just yet, because I think I mentioned this earlier, but the flashbacks are just giving me whiplash. So now we're going to add additional layer of flashback. I don't know just yet how that's going to translate to their relationship right now. It might just bother me even more that like, they're not good now, because I'm like, even back then you were good, you know. So we'll see how it plays out.
I agree. This is a very typical trope, but for some reason the way they film everything and the music playing in the background, it's just done really, really well. So
yeah, I agree. It's a cute scene.
All right, anything else, Andy?
No, I think that's mostly what we had. I feel like for the majority of us, we've had so much. We don't know, like, if we are liking this show, I guess that's safe to say. I think we do definitely, it sounds like we do have a lot of gripes for the show. I think there's a lot of villain characters or frustrating characters that we see on camera that we're like, ugh, another one of these characters. I know we didn't talk about also the brother's wife, too. She's probably going to be a menace for the show as well.
You think
but in a goofier way. She looks menacing. I like her.
Well, you think so? Like,
when she drank the whole bottle of whiskey and then gaslit him into being like, oh, no, you drank it. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is interesting. But I can't tell what her motive is. Like, she's like, I don't want to be seen on camera with in any of your photos. But they have a kid together, so it's not like she's just sticking it out for, you know, an heir. So I don't really know what her end goal is. It's kind of weird.
I don't think there is an end goal. I think she's just living her end goal. She has everything she could possibly want. Mm. She just has to sit there and pour him drinks until he goes to sleep. But she's living the life, right?
Do you think she loves him? Is there love there at all, you guys think?
Maybe she's got another man in the relationship too. Or she feels a little bit manipulative in the sense that, like, when she gaslit him. And, like, just her face just feels like a villainy menace face. Like, yeah. I feel like down the line, we're going to get really frustrated with her. I can see that.
Wait, yeah. What happens if the other male lead in the love triangle just ends up with her?
Rex. I don't think so. I think that's
menace with a menace couple.
We'll see. You know who I think is the biggest menace though? I think is Grandpa's girlfriend. That lady she has so many things up her sleeve. When they were playing chess and he was like, oh, or was it chess, like Go maybe? He was like, oh, so this is how you play. And she's like, oh, really? And she's like, bah, 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 and then like wins it. I was like, oh, she's something else.
She demands help from him in the future.
Yeah, and she always like calls the shaman and tells him like, oh, consult the shaman and stuff. Sneaky.
I don't know, I will say like this family, you know, betraying aspect, that's not what I want to watch this show for. I think we talked about it last week in the episode, but like I don't need another just family stabbing each other in the back show, and I hope that that doesn't become the main focus, but I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know, guys. It's an interesting start to the year. Like, not to be negative, but I just feel like there hasn't been one drama this year where all three of us collectively were, like, loving, which is kind of interesting. Hopefully we get one of those. You know, like, there's been dramas that we've all liked individually, but not one where all of us were like, yes. But now that I think about it, last year, until moving, last year was a little bit slow as well.
No, I mean, Love to Hate You, I think we all really liked. That was true. Like one of the first shows that we all watched, and we were like, this is a great show.
That's true.
All right.
Well, I think that wraps up Queen of Tears, Andy, unless there's anything else. Jenny, do you want to remind everyone what we're going to watch next week?
Yeah, so next week we're going to continue with Queen of Tears. So we're going to be doing episodes 5 and 6, and hopefully things get a little better for the Project crew from there. And then we're going to be picking up a new K-drama. I believe there's 4 episodes out right now, but we're just going to be reviewing 2 next week. This is called The Midnight Studio, and it's on Viki.
Hey everyone, this is Andy, editing the podcast after recording the episode. The Project crew, after consideration, after talking to the episode, we decided to drop Queen of Tears because I think the three of us haven't really been enjoying this show as much as we thought we would be enjoying. And we didn't want to like add extra negative thoughts towards the show. I think we just weren't vibing really much with it. But we have decided to pick up Wedding Impossible instead because I think Jenny has watched a couple episodes of it and I have watched a couple episodes of it on my free time. And we've definitely been enjoying it a lot more than the other K-dramas we've been watching recently. So we wanted to pick it up just to talk about our thoughts and see what we like about the show. And hopefully that show will continue to do well as well. So next week we're actually picking up Wedding Impossible episodes 1 through 4. And we're also watching Midnight Runners as well.
Socials?
Yeah, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, a bunch of playlists. Check out our Ko-Fi and our Patreon if you want to support us. Patreon is also where we have our extra monthly episodes. And finally, please leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
And please sign us up.
This is the Poetry Playlist, and we're out.